You're listening to the Business of Pharmacy podcast with me, your host, Mike Kelzer. Well, hello, Nathan.
Hello, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you tonight.
Thanks for joining us. Nathan, for those who haven't come across you online, introduce yourself and tell our listeners what's going on. Why are we talking?
Sure. So I'm a pharmacist by trade. I used to own some pharmacies in Indiana, and now we own a PBM. So I'm the founder and CEO of TruScripts, and we've been in the PBM industry now since about 2006.
I want to tell our listeners how we met, and we're meeting for the first time right now, but I had a friend at school at Purdue and a fraternity brother and a fellow pharmacist and so on. And he reached out a few weeks ago after I had Eric Packman from 46 Brooklyn on. And he said, we're going to be talking to Eric and so on and how the podcast go. And I said, oh, well, it was good. I said, I don't have it ready for anybody to listen to yet. But basically, we talked about this and that. And I said, Eric worked on Wall Street. And he was talking about the old days on Wall Street, how you had a lot of corruption and you had the banks writing good stuff about themselves in the press to get people to buy those stocks and things like that. So Eric was saying that the corruption on Wall Street was nothing compared to the corruption of the PBMs. And I said, so that's what we talked about. So I had lost track of where Alan was. And he said, oh, well, I work for a PBM. And I thought, oh, I just stuck my foot in my mouth. But then he said, Mike, you're talking the traditional PBMs. Mm-hmm. We've got something different here. And I said, ah, I'm going to talk to someone there. Who do I talk to? And he said, we're going to talk to Nathan. I said, perfect. I want to get Nathan on here. But that's why we're talking, is to find out, what is a good PBM? Is there such a thing?
Oh, sure, Mike. It's certainly a lot to unpack there. There was an independent pharmacy in Washington, Indiana, the three brothers ran, and they were third-generation pharmacists and just great guys. I still consider them brothers today. So they saw something in me and brought me in and said, look, you come on board, we're going to put another pharmacy down in Princeton. And that would have been our third pharmacy. And then it really started to explode. And then as a retail pharmacist, I loved the customers. I loved the interactions. I loved testing new jokes on different people. And yeah. I just, you know how it is.
Sure.
You own pharmacies. Yes. Yeah. Almost all, and when they walk in, there's a few that are really special to you.
Yeah, sure.
And even to this day, I haven't dispensed a prescription in 10 years. But so we saw firsthand, it really started back in 2000, 2001, when the anthrax was being mailed to all the politicians, the white powder in the envelopes, and Cipro was the drug of choice. And Cipro went generic and became pretty much a $4 drug at Walmart. And then a new drug came out called Proquin. And Proquin was just a specially coded Cipro, but it was $500 instead of $4. And we had some PBMs who were rejecting the generic and requiring the brand.
Yeah.
And we were the ones buying it, right? You know how right. much this stuff cost. And then we knew there was a problem. And then 2002 or 3 or whatever it was, all the mergers started to happen. And the CVS Caremark deal and the maintenance choice and the funneling of business to the pharmacies that they own was just an extreme conflict of interest.
And Nathan, just for the listeners that may not be right in the jungle of pharmacy, it's like you're sitting there saying, okay, wait a minute. This drug costs $4, but the insurance doesn't want us to dispense this. They want us to dispense something that costs $500. Okay, somehow they're getting kickback.
100%. And it had the exact same chemical molecule in both drugs.
Yeah.
Identical. Ciprofloxacin hydrochloride in both molecules. One was a specially coated tablet. So I guess if you had dysphagia or problem swallowing, but none of my patients did, right? And if you did, you can figure out a way to swallow a $4 tablet. Yeah. That's for 30 of them.
Yeah.
So we knew firsthand something was wrong, and we knew the writing was on the wall that these PBMs, who are supposed to be these fiduciary agents, in my opinion,
yeah.
and they should be protecting the client and the member. And in full disclosure, there are some bad pharmacies out there too. And so PBMs should be protecting the clients and members from the drug manufacturers and from the bad pharmacies.
Mm.
And they weren't doing that. and it's the only industry in the world that defies the laws of mathematics.
What would a bad pharmacy be in your example? Who would they be protecting against?
Oh, sure. Oh, some of the compounding pharmacies out there who was charging $50,000 a claim for a pain gel that should have been about $75. Let's get a good dispensing fee there.
The PBM could kind of be watchdogs and say, hey, we're going to put some limits on this and so on.
Yeah, they could be the watchdog. And some pharmacies are out there. Obviously, they got to drive revenue. So they're trying to generate as much revenue as they can. And some pharmacies are trying to convert patients from generic over to brand because the dollar per prescription margin is higher.
Yeah.
So that's what I mean. And we just wanted to use common sense and fifth grade math is really how we built this huge company that we have now.
With the brothers, then how many pharmacies did you get to there?
I think we had around 12, and some of them were medical equipment only, but we had between 12 and 15, we had nursing home, home infusion, compounding, and retail.
And then you started noticing some of these shenanigans going on.
We did. Yeah, we were seeing firsthand some of the shenanigans going on. We saw the writing on the wall with the vertical integration. And when the PBM started buying pharmacies, it was the fox guarding the hen house.
Yeah.
And so therefore, one of the brothers and I just, you know, over a drink one night said, look, let's try to do something about this. So
this is how long after you had joined the three brothers originally?
So I joined in 98, and then this would have been probably in 04, 05.
01, we're seeing this Cipro problem and that. So this is a few years after seeing all this baloney going on.
So one of the brothers and I, we had the idea, but we didn't know how you did it, right?
Yeah.
We knew why. We knew the why, but we didn't know the how. So one of my neighbors was an HR director, and he said, look, Nate, if you get your PBM stood up, I want to be one of your first clients. So what he was able to provide for the first time up to that point was he was able to provide me his invoices from Express Scripts. And so here's thousands of claims that he was being billed, because the way the system works is the PBM adjudicates the claim, then they bill the client, they get paid, and then they PBM pays the pharmacy. So they're the intermediary.
Yeah.
The pharmacy and the client never know what each other is getting. So I was able to take his invoices and go and find my checks that Express Scripts paid, and I was able to put them side by side. And there was cases, Mike, where he was charged $800, I was paid $100. Overall, that they don't do that on all claims, but I added all of claims together, and it was an average of $15 a claim, and that was back in 2006.
$15 a claim difference that they were getting.
Of spread pricing, and that doesn't even factor in the rebates. That's just what they were overcharging the client and keeping for their profit.
The buyers of this service, and if they're like me, I don't know what the hell's going on anyways as far as what I'm supposed to benefit. I'm supposed to be getting from different things. But what did they think was happening? Your friend's business, did he think he was paying a certain percentage to the PBM? What would it be like if he was being treated well by them?
It's the most uneducated product sold in America. So what I mean by that is the broker comes in, and basically the insurance broker tells the client, do you want to pay MAC plus $1.50, or do you want to pay MAC plus $1.80? And the client says, well, I want to pay MAC plus $1.50. Then you go back to the client and say, what's MAC? And they said, they don't even know what it stands for, let alone that it's just a made up number from that particular PBM. And most PBMs have five or six different MAC lists.
So they were getting the same MAC BS as the pharmacists were getting.
Oh, 100%. And one, they weren't even getting the BS because the broker was just saying, hey, this is the right deal. You know, 9's less than 10. So you want 9, right? So then what happens on a weekly or biweekly basis, all that client sees is one line item with their total medical expenses. And usually it's medical and pharmacy both combined. So it just shows $47,000 was last week's medical and pharmacy expenses. They fund that account, and that's all the detail they get.
How did your friend have all those details from owning that business?
Express Scripts sent him the actual invoice. But the way it works traditionally, and that's just because he was very particular.
He might have asked for it. Show me more. Show me more.
Most clients, you just set up a medical account, and they just simply draw out that account, and you get one line item. You don't get any detail behind it.
And he pushed for that probably back then when they were still probably offering it.
He pushed it, and I told him the information I needed. So he reached out and got the information I needed.
Wow.
I'm sure I violated several different covenants as far as, you know how it is. The PBMs make you sign an 89-page. They take everything except your kids.
Yeah.
They leave you with the one thing that causes you headaches. I'm like, just take the kids too while you're at it.
I might even do that. School just started up and I got a couple that are, or one that's just.
We ought to trade. And then maybe if someone said there's people in this world that are praying for the things that you're complaining about.
One of the lines I heard that if 30 people are in a circle and you all threw your problems in the middle, you'd all probably take your own back. You know, you just know them. They're yours.
100%.
So this guy got the information. And so 3 years later, you and one of your partners, you say, we got to do something. So
So
you didn't know how, but your neighbor helped you out.
He was an HR director. So we just basically got online and just started researching. And we found a great fellow. His name's Bruce McAnally. I'm going to throw his name out there. And just great Texan, Southern accent, just the sweetest guy. Just willing to share and everything. So he educated us on what we needed, and we just learned from there. And then this shows how little we knew. Our first client came on September 15th of 2007. So it was middle of the month, and it was on a Saturday. And we did that because it was our lowest pharmacy volume day, and we knew we could watch the claims come through. So, and then we were off to the races after that.
You still had these pharmacies?
So I still had the pharmacy, so we're still doing the PBM on the side, mm-hmm. and then that started to grow. So then I was the co-founder and CEO of the PBM, and then I was the VP of the pharmacies, and then so it was 2007. So I basically helped grow that PBM and hire the folks and develop the programs, and then make a long story short, 2010. It's really when I really started to find my personal faith a little bit more. Mm. And I've never been like a Bible thumper by any means. And I always thought growing up, we never went to church because we lived paycheck to paycheck. And I thought people were just born religious.
Yeah.
And so I went to a retreat at church after two or three years of saying, no, that's not for me. And it absolutely just lit the light where these men that I had a tremendous amount of respect for were sharing their stories. And it was just like me. So that was in 2010. And then I got built relationships with a different group of men. And to this day, we went on a little man trip last night with some of them. But what that did, though, is that made me start to kind of drift away from the brothers a little bit.
Okay.
Because just philosophically and morally, we just became a little bit more and more different.
Sure.
And then in 2013, a number of things were occurring, and I knew, to be a completely transparent PBM, we couldn't be owned by pharmacy. So I made an offer to buy out the PBM. They declined, and they bought me out with no strings attached. So I just spun off, and the majority of the clients and the members came over with me. And we started at zero. I mean, we lost a lot of money our first year, and this year we'll process about $200 million of top line revenue.
Wow.
And we got clients and members in all 50 states.
Business-wise, you offered the brothers that you would buy out your co-founded PBM, mm-hmm. and you were going to buy that out and leave the pharmacy?
Yeah, I was just going to basically split off from them at that point.
And they said, no, we're not offering the PBM to you.
Yeah, we had a golden goose that I'd helped create, and to their, in fairness to them, they had a golden goose.
In the PBM.
In the PBM, because it was such low overhead. Why would we want to get rid of this? I was like, well, it was my baby, and it's my programs, my team, my clients, and, I just feel like it should go with me. So,
but they were saying, no, it's at least 50-50.
Well, we're basically all 25% owners. And then once I've always been pretty good at math. And then once I looked at that, I said, okay, I'm kind of the odd man out here.
Yeah, because it's 75-25 then. And you had that set up originally. I mean, you knew you were only going to be 25% of that.
Well, when we first started the company, we didn't have any operating agreement, no business documents, no anything.
For the PBM?
Yeah, for the PBM. We literally ran it like a lemonade stand because it was just out of a philosophical mission. And then once it started to take hold, we said, okay. And then, for full disclosure, they decided on their own to take that under their own. And they created all the documents themselves without any of my involvement. And they came to me with the final product. And I said, look, time out here. This is, my company, my baby. I should have been involved from the very beginning with all that.
That's when they went to 25 each?
We were 25 each already.
So almost like a handshake thing. You were all 25 each already.
We had the stock agreement, but no operating agreement.
I imagine when the PBM forms, you're not really thinking much, and you almost like do it on a card table right next to the counting machine or something, right? It feels like it's just part of everything.
It was just like Dave Ramsey when he started his financial piece on the card table in his living room. There was no goal. We were doing it for a philosophical mission. We were going to expose the bad guys.
But in their mind, they, being that it was in their store and things like that, they're thinking it's more theirs in the end somehow?
Yeah, I think so. I think they were just looking at the ownership and said it's 75% ours, 25% yours. And, you know, we all created it. Really, two of us did. And at the end of the day, the ownership, 75 was more than 25. And philosophically, I just some of the brothers, you know, and I were getting along less better than, and then we needed to part ways.
It was time. So then when you left, were you like, screw my 25%? Did you get anything from that?
Oh, they bought me out. That's what was crazy about this. They bought me out, gave me a pretty hefty check over the next 3 years.
Oh, they did.
And because they had to, because I owned a part of the pharmacies, I owned a part of the PBMs, and I think it's really where some egos of some of the brothers got in their way. They thought, you know, this poor kid from the West End of Washington, what's he going to be able to do on his own? Let him go.
How did they put a value on the PBM at that point?
So, yeah, in typical fashion, they just kind of shot from the hip a little bit. So they got on they got online. Yeah, actually, interesting story. They got online, found a price per covered life, and then they came in and said, hey, this is the price that we should pay you. And I said, no, it's like that price isn't right. And it's like it's too high. I go, I wouldn't buy you out for that price, and I don't expect you to buy me out.
Really?
I lowered it and, you know, took a, especially the first year, because we didn't get paid the salary for the first year, but it just wasn't right. Yeah, it's just, so I tried to protect them to the very end.
So then you start this thing off on your own. Now you're without a pharmacy job because I imagine you're not working in the pharmacy once you went on your own. That's got to be a little bit of a scary time, but I suppose you knew that some customers would come over with you and so on?
Yeah, I did, obviously. I mean, this had gone on since August of 13 through December of 13. So a number of folks knew I was transitioning out. And I owned most of the relationships, and they turned into personal relationships, which are the best kind. And to this date, I don't want to come across that we select who we want to work with.
Yeah.
But if someone doesn't share the same core values we do, we don't work with them.
Yeah.
Because we don't care how much money we make. We truly don't. And growing up on welfare, I've got more money now. Whenever I made six figures as a pharmacist,
yeah,
I had made it.
Yeah, right.
So no matter how many more decimal points, it just brings more attorneys and more CPAs, yeah, is all that does. So
when you say you own the relationship, you mean emotional-wise that these people, yeah, knew you better than the brothers?
There was no contract, nothing like that. No.
You knew they'd come with you instead of stay with them.
I built the relationship. I was the face and voice of our company.
Right.
And attracted enough people and who saw me for who I was, and they trusted me. And I'm sure I repelled some people by being too open, right? And I'm not a sales guy. I just like to share with people what I know. And I like to learn, and I like to make things better.
What were you feeling like that first month? Would it be fear? Would it be excitement? Would it be wonder? What was the main psychological feeling in your head?
So the main psychological feeling I had in my head was, would some of the existing vendors that I had used in the past, would they work with me? And once we were able to confirm that, then everything else was easy.
The vendor being?
All the folks we use, it'd be like your drug wholesaler, your vials. So we'd have like a claims engine, a rebate aggregator. Those were the big two, our claims engine and our rebate aggregator.
What the hell does that mean? Tell me, what are those mean?
The claims, so it's like QS1. So your pharmacy systems, or the QS1 is a pharmacy system.
Sure.
So it's like a QS1 system. So QS1, your pharmacy operating system, is the brains of your operation.
Yeah.
So that's what our claims engine is for us as a PBM. So it's these vendors that you can lease their claims engine.
Truly a computer program and so on.
So basically, they give you access to their system, and then you just wrap your programs, your plan parameters, and how you want things done around their engine. And their engine makes all the magic happen. So the pharmacy network, you can lease or create your own. Pharmacy help desk, same thing. We did all the member and all the client care on our side. And then basically you just have third party vendors that work for you, that do more of the pharmacy administration, pharmacy contracts, pharmacy payments. We hired someone to do that.
Okay, so like when I think about my pharmacy system, we use it for obviously the database and all that kind of stuff, but nowadays it's mainly to talk to the people that are going to pay us, the third party. Who's on the other end of this pharmacy aggregator you talk about?
Yeah, so there's several in the marketplace that you can use, and you can create your own once you get enough volume, and that's where we are working toward.
Yeah.
Is we'll have our own system, but right now it's just much more efficient. So there's a number of these claims engines out there, and so Relay Health controls like the highway, so to speak, that all these claims go down. So when you submit a claim, you have a BIN number. A BIN number and a PCN number. Well, that routes, Relay Health routes that BIN number back to the owner of that BIN number. So that goes to a particular claims engine. So that's basically that says take a left on Highway 41 or 69. So it's just basically just the roadmap.
Nathan, let me see if I got this right. There's a pharmacist, let's say they're working on QS1. Basically, QS1 is talking to your claims computer, sort of?
Mm-hmm, exactly.
So it's a way to merge all that.
QS1's talking to Relay Health. Relay Health is typically the intermediary that controls all the claims.
Relay Health, then, is communicating with your computer.
With all the different BIN numbers.
All the different BIN numbers.
There could be 1,000 BIN numbers out there.
And then someone at your place is physically on, like, this screen looking and seeing what Relay Health has told you through this claims program.
So what we do, we set the plan parameters up in our system. We do a tremendous QA checking. So once we get the plan parameter set up in our system, which is our claims engine,
Yeah. Everything's
done automatically. So whenever you hit F7 in QS1 and submit that claim,
Yeah. In
about a half a second, about 200 things are transacting,
mm-hmm. And
then you get your response back.
Gotcha.
So what happened in that half a second is it went to Relay Health, then it hit our system, hit our plan parameters, then we returned to you what the deductible amount is for that member because you sent the member ID, the group number, the birthday, the person code. So then we hit that against our system, and then we then interface with the TPA who processes on the medical claims, and we have an accumulator file that exchanges claims back and forth so that we can track deductibles.
You had said two things. One was the claims one. What was the other thing that you said?
A rebate aggregator, which is one of the most disgusting parts of the industry. But
let's hear it.
So with the rebate aggregators, obviously these manufacturers know the game. If a drug, and again, obviously take it with a grain of salt, but when I say that the prescriber does not determine what the patient gets, I'm not being literal,
but
the PBM does determine what the patient gets.
Mm-hmm.
That's the reality.
What do you mean literally? I mean the doctor sort of does, but the PBM really has the say in it.
I mean, this is a practical question to everybody who's ever gotten a prescription filled. If your drug was not covered, who has voluntarily pulled out $450 and just paid cash for that drug? Or who calls their doctor and says, well, what's covered?
Gotcha.
So the PBMs control what's preferred and what's non-preferred. And there's this inherent belief that, well, they're looking at the most cost-effective product for that patient. You know, right drug for the right patient at the right dose at the right time.
Yeah.
And I'd say in most cases, in many cases, that's true. But in some cases, they can obviously drive volume to a certain product over the other. Because as you and I know, as pharmacists, there's certain therapeutic classes that have brand only as your three options. Like when the Advair inhalers came out, for instance, in that therapeutic class, you may have had two or three competitors and they were all brand.
Right.
Right. Traditionally, PBMs do not take a generic drug and try to get a member to switch over to a brand. They're not quite that brazen just yet. But what's happening behind the scenes, and again, I think it's just too tight of a line to walk personally, but I forget the inhaler that just went generic, but our P&T committee sent it to me for my review, and they said, look, the rebate that we can get for our client on the brand nets out a much lower cost for the client than using the generic. And I said, well, theoretically, if you can flip it on back to the generic the day that that generic becomes a multi-source and not miss one claim, then the client can be whole. But what happens is the brand name companies know that the patient conversion rate back to the generic is fairly slow.
Yeah.
So you do the math on that single source generic, and the math makes sense to use that brand. And we have a full pass-through on our rebates. So we look at the fifth grade math and common sense type of philosophy. But we did not feel we could be reactionary, we could react quick enough to where every single claim, because if they just get two or three claims per patient to go through at that rate, at the brand rate, whenever it does go multi-source, which to the viewers means that price plummets. So now the generic makes more sense. It was just too fine of a line to play. But if a PBM, and again, the common sense part of our model is what does your current PBM charge the client for revenue? And in almost all cases, it's a zero disclosed admin fee. They do it for free in the contract. Yet they're making $180 billion in net income.
All right, let me back up on two things, Nathan. The brand name thing you were talking about, It's kind of like a brand name in the grocery store offering coupons 3 months in a row on a certain cereal, hoping that when you don't have a coupon, people are going to be slow to go over to the generic because they're so used to the brand name. So you're saying that you could give someone a better deal by getting the brand name if you pass the rebates through, but it would be really hard to get all the customers to switch over the first day it goes multi-source and it plummets. Because even if you get a few of them to stay with that brand name for a while, it's kind of screwing people over, basically.
But, I mean, the manufacturers, in my opinion, have done all the math and all the market analysis where they know, look, the whatever the term is, I call it migration rate or whatever it's called, they know that there's going to be enough members who stay on that brand to pay for those rebates.
Yes, to pay for that.
But theoretically, if the PBM, as soon as Metaspan marks that multi-source, which usually we get our Metaspan files, you know, once or twice a week, as soon as the day it goes multi-source, the brand is rejected, well, now you're going to have tremendous member abrasion.
Abrasion like?
Oh, you go to the pharmacy and now your brand's not covered anymore. It's like, what do you mean it's not covered? Well, it was covered last month. Well, if that triggers on September the 12th, then as of September 12th, the brand's no longer covered. So if you go in the 19th and get your brand refilled, it's going to reject and you're not going to know it. Because these members aren't notified because there's not enough time to notify them.
So the friction is just that they have to get the generic then?
The friction is typically they may have to get a new prescription if it's Adderall, or if it's a C2, for instance, they'd have to get a new prescription.
When you were talking about the PBM committee does this and that, I'm always back there thinking, yeah, but Nathan, you know, doesn't this company get to decide? And you already told me. It's like, No, the broker from their town or something went to this person and said, do you want to pay $1.50 or $1.35 or something?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that's all the decisions that they make. And that's PBM is making all the other decisions, right? They don't get their hands dirty in any of that stuff.
100%. And again, we're certainly not throwing stones. There's a lot of great people out there working on behalf of the clients and the members. And there's a lot of bad companies out there. And typically, in my opinion, this will not give me any fans, but if the truth hurts, they need to change the truth.
Yeah.
And the larger the brokerage company, they have preferred PBMs that they work with. The bigger the TPA or carrier, they have preferred PBMs they work with. And that preferred means they're getting paid. And I've seen firsthand where people have asked me, you know, pay us $2 to $5 a claim and we'll put you as a preferred PBM. Well, that's almost all of our admin fee that we charge. So the folks on the ground level, the brokers on the ground level aren't necessarily aware of this. But corporate's putting down these dictates that says, here's your preferred vendor list, and then this is the price discounts the client gets if they use a preferred vendor. So that's how they get them signed up for particular PBMs, and then they can call them coalitions or whatever, and that's a joke. And it all goes back to the fact of how do these PBMs generate their money.
Do some PBMs, do they have the audacity, I guess, to say, we're not making any money? We're doing this all for free? Why would someone fall for that when they're talking about the PBM they're hiring?
I would say 70% of all claims that are being transacted are on a zero admin fee model.
So the company thinks that the PBM's doing this out of the goodness of their heart.
So basically what happens is here's the sales pitch. And let's use Anthem and ESI as an example. They'll come in and they'll say, hey, look, if you use Anthem, the Anthem ESI package will be $42 PEPM. And you pay Anthem $42 PEPM, and then all these other services are provided at no charge. If you use TrueScripts, there's going to be a $15 PEPM carve-out.
Standing for what?
Per employee per month.
Gotcha.
So however many employees you month. So therefore, if you use a non-preferred PBM, you're going to pay $15 more. So the theory is that if you use our preferred vendors, the cost of doing business is cheaper. What they don't realize is that if any PBM can administer those services, and once we get the interface set up, there's no work at all that the TPA or Medicare carrier does on the pharmacy side. It's just all a myth. So when you pull up that contract, you say, well, how much of that is ESI getting? Well, they're not getting any of it. The $42 PEPM is going to Anthem. Where ESI makes their money is on the spread pricing with the pharmacies and with the rebates.
And they're telling people that or not?
Oh, they're not telling anyone that.
How do people think, does the topic never come up?
Never comes up.
They don't care if the PBM makes money.
9's better than 10, so who cares?
Right. They're paying less, they don't care.
Who cares? And meanwhile, their discounts continue to get better and better, and their PEPM costs continue to rise every single year. And that's where folks eventually get sick and tired of being sick and tired. We'll look at their drug claims. We'll run it through our system. Then we'll come back and say, hey, look, AWP is not a standard number. So AWP minus 17 and AWP minus 18, those aren't based off the same data sets because there's so much manipulation over what's the definition of a brand. The AWP is tied to the NDC number, which is the 11-digit number. Well, the last two digits is a package size. So theoretically, if the PBM owns a mail-order pharmacy, they can order a 10,000-count bottle that's made just specifically for that mail-order pharmacy.
Yeah.
And then that has a new NDC number. Well, a new NDC number generates a new AWP that's created by that pharmacy and that drug manufacturer. So the AWP is controlled by the drug manufacturer, and if it's a restricted product, meaning that only one pharmacy can buy that package size, then that pharmacy can help participate in what that AWP becomes.
Geez, that's really, well, you know what? You know what I'm finding out talking to you is that it sounds like the exact same BS manipulation of the English language, you know, of what means what. It sounds like they're using the same one on the companies on that side paying for it as they are for the pharmacies and so on.
Exactly. And I mean, we have a 13-page contract, I think. It used to start off at 8 pages. Some of the traditional PBMs have an 80, 90-page contract. And the devil's in the details. And it just goes back to common sense. Every employer... Every business has to generate revenue. Even the nonprofits have to generate revenue.
You talked about the carve-outs, but a lot of times that's not even offered, right? A lot of times they're like, here's these three national ones. You can go to McDonald's or Burger King. We're not going to talk about Joe's Burger Joint, you know? So a lot of times you're not in the conversation, right?
Well, we're not. And that's where basically it's like a pyramid. And at the very base of the pyramid are the clients. The next tier is the brokers. Then the TPAs, the third-party administrators.
Give me an example of a broker.
A broker is like, let me see here, USI, Aon, Mercer, Willis.
Blue Cross?
No, that's a TPA. So a broker is an insurance advisor that employer hires. And because that employer knows nothing about insurance, they make widgets, right?
Yeah.
So they hire an insurance consultant who charges them a PEPM, which is a per employee per month fee, as an advisor, and they're the ones that do all the due diligence for dental, vision, all your insurance needs that you offer your employees.
Oh, so that's probably who my pharmacy would have gone to, just like I would go to a car insurance person in town who would then mm-hmm. show me the different companies.
Just like your car insurance agent, except for your health, your employee benefits.
Gotcha. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So they're the brokers. That's who we've partnered with. So we basically try to align ourselves with the brokers, and it's usually the regional independent-owned brokers. Because the larger brokers, again, you know, when they're getting paid $1-2 a claim, and not all of them, right? But you know, when they're getting paid $1-3 a claim, and they got 150 to 500 million claims with a certain PBM, they're not moving that business, right?
In those cases, there's what's the term, margin with mystery.
Yeah.
The brokers are getting money
in some cases. Yeah.
In some cases, the big PBMs are getting money.
Tremendous amounts.
But the businesses,
their costs continue to increase.
Their costs continue to increase, and everybody just kind of goes along with it.
Then the traditional PBM said, "Well, it could have been worse.
Could have been worse
because you know 9's better than 10." And then we come in and say, "Look, some of what we do is on trust. The majority of it is verifiable because you can't prove that you're truly looking out for a client." 24/7. We can show the data and what we did, how we do our blocking and tackling, but it all goes back to trust. And so we've built some really great relationships with some regional brokers nationwide. In some cases, it's been directly with the client. And then that client reintroduces us to the brokers. We share the same values. And then that broker then goes into UMR or Anthem and says, look, if you don't carve this out with no fee, because I know that because we know the game, you're going to lose this client. Then lo and behold, instead of charging us $1 million interface fee and a $15 per employee per month carve out fee to the client, which has been attempted, the broker says, no, you're going to be fired. We're going to switch TPAs. So then they come back and say, okay, well, we'll interface. I've had a TPA tell me, look, I need a $15 per employee per month fee. So basically what they wanted me to do, Mike, is they wanted me to create a formulary that would generate $15 in rebates per employee per month that I could pay the TPA so that they could lower the admin fee down to $25 to compete with the Blues in their state. So they wanted me to stack the formulary with all these high rebatable drugs and then give the rebates to the TPA so that they can lower their admin fee because that was the only thing the client was looking at.
The loser, again, is the client.
It's the client and then the member and then the local pharmacy. You all lose because that prescription's going to a mail order. The costs are going up. The premiums are going up. The bottom line of that employer is going down. And it's just a vicious cycle all around because their insurance cost is going up and their revenue staying the same. So it's just fifth grade math that when your revenue stays flat for that particular client and operating expenses increases in the form of health insurance, you have less net income. I think it's a humanitarian crisis. I really do. And that's why philosophically we said enough.
Everybody's going to make their money. The loser is the client. Even a pharmacist, when a pharmacist thinks like, oh, I'm going to really stick it to the PBM on this one. The pharmacies hate the PBM so much that if we can find a way legally to get a little bit extra money from them, we're going to make that decision. But it hurts your neighbor across the street because the PBM's going to keep their money.
Yeah, the PBM does not fund this system one nickel. All the money, every penny, comes from the employer and the employee. Every penny. They're the only two people who put money into the system because they're the ones that cover the entire drug cost in copay and plan paid.
Yeah, somehow, no matter what it is, they're going to cover it.
When you adjudicate a claim, you have the patient's share and you have the employer share. So that's covering 100% of your contracted price.
Yeah, because a PBM is not a risk taker. They're just a money mover.
We're a third-party administrator.
You're shifting money back and forth. You're not taking any risk.
Well, we take some risks because if our clients don't fund it, we fund it. Last January, I wrote a check for $282,000 out of my pocket.
Oh, because a client went bust?
Because their client went bust. I could have stuck it to the pharmacies. But as past president of the Indiana Pharmacist Alliance and past president of the Community Pharmacies of Indiana, I'm like, look, it's not their fault. There is a contractual agreement. When that claim is adjudicated electronically, there's a contractual agreement, in my opinion, between the PBM and the pharmacy that says as long as you didn't commit fraud, pharmacy, you're going to get paid for that claim. Otherwise, there's no way you all can take the risk. Right? When you dispense a $1,000 drug and the patient pays $50 and you're waiting for your $950, you got to know you're going to get paid for that.
Let's go back to 1980. I was a freshman in high school, and that's just when it seems like some of the third parties were coming in, you know, Blue Cross, and we had the claim forms and typewriters and all that kind of stuff.
The HICFAs, yeah.
HICFAs and all that kind of stuff. In every scenario, would you see the same abuse happening again? Let's say we're in the multiverse with 10 parallel universes, whatever. Would this happen every time again because there's bad players? Or could someone have done something back in the 80s to stop this abuse, whether it be someone like you who had the vision and knowing this was going to happen and came in and did a better way, or the government did something, you know, maybe the consumers put their foot down, or would this still have played out the same way across these 10 different scenarios?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think, I don't know if there's anything that could have changed in the past or if there's any better way of doing it, Mike. And in any industry, greed is present. And greed is also progressive. And I think back, that's what happened in back in the 80s when PCS, which was pharmacy card services or prescription card services.
I haven't heard that name in a long time.
Yeah. And the only thing I liked about PCS was their cards were so easy to understand because you had ID number and group number. Some insurance companies, they didn't even include ID numbers on their card. And you're like, how in the hell do you want me to bill this stupid thing for $1.10?
Yeah.
Right. So anyway, but what was happening, though, is they saw an opportunity. And they said, look, we're administering all these claims here, and we're saving the HR team. Because before that, you know, the employee would just turn in their HICFA 1500 form and get reimbursed claim by claim by the HR manager. So PCS saw an opportunity where they can streamline the administrative functions. And then they said, look, you know, there's supply and demand here. And right now we're paying these retail prices. And with the 70,000 pharmacies, there's 70,000 retail prices for the same drug.
Right.
And I mean, and when we ran our pharmacies, we didn't maintain our retail prices very effectively because 95% was billed to an insurance company.
Right.
So you always kept them as high as possible because you never wanted to have it below what your reimbursable rate was.
Yeah, right.
So they said, hey, we can do some supply and demand. So then they went back to the employer and say, hey, look, tell you what, let us negotiate some pricing. And with these pharmacies.
Yeah.
And it's basically, hey, do you want access to my 10,000 members? And if so, I need 10% off your retail price. Well, once you get the first pharmacy on, you got to have the people walking through. And then PCS started to charge for that value. So it's a very legitimate value that they brought. And then when they became publicly traded companies, I want my stock portfolio to perform well. So they had to continue to beat the Wall Street estimates. So they had to keep going back and say, how can we make more? How can we make more? How can we make more? Then they looked at one point in time, you remember Merck Medco. So you had Merck, which is a drug manufacturer. You had Medco that was a mail order pharmacy and a PBM all owned by the same company.
Right.
So they told you where you're going to go and what drug you're going to get and what you're going to pay. And it was all by the same umbrella. So the conflict of interest there, and that's one thing that we shed at TrueScripts, we do not feel that any PBM should ever own a pharmacy. I could add a specialty pharmacy at my headquarters. I'm still a licensed pharmacist. I could take 1,000 square feet, and I could generate about $5 to $8 million in net income just by filling 500 prescriptions a month through specialty. Well, we philosophically said that that is not aligned with our morals and our core values.
You could make that because you would take that business.
I could restrict all of my clients to use my specialty pharmacy.
Right.
Right, because it's a restricted supply chain anyway. So, but we partner with specialty pharmacies across the country, and we use them as our specialty pharmacy providers, and they're all independent. Most of them are independent pharmacy providers, and they are our specialty network. So the point is we said from day one that we will never own any pharmacies whatsoever when we are a PBM. We should be the fiduciary agent looking on behalf of our clients and members and protecting them against manufacturers and pharmacies.
Nathan, right now, what would you do? Well, not you. Let's say an evil person comes in who looks just like you and knocks you out, takes you out of the picture, and wants to make the most money he can, but he's got to do it for 10 years, okay? So he can't like just hold up a bank and make the money. He's got to do it for 10 years. What kind of things would that person do for 10 years to make as much money as he can? That's all he cares about is making money. How would he do it in your company?
Easy, very easy. They would stack the formulary with just a few drugs at a time for a sort of a drug like Deuexis, which is going to cost about $30,000 a year. Yet you can get the active ingredients over the counter. So for that $30,000 a year drug, I could probably make about $15,000 or $16,000 in a rebate from the manufacturer.
They don't care. They need some profit and they need to pay for their ingredient cost.
It's a 3-cent drug with famotidine and ibuprofen. So if they can net out $14,000 a year per member and then get enough members on it, they can make hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars. So they pay the PBM half of that price, and they said, make us a preferred, require a PA, make sure that they take Advil, but then quickly get them over to Deuexis. So a PBM could stack the formulary, because there's about 4,000 drugs total that we adjudicate on a GPI level, NDC level, or GPI level, different drugs that's on your shelves across the country. So of those 4,000 drugs, if you slip in 5 or 10. Now, meanwhile, just think how the system works. And I know I don't have a whiteboard in front of me, but this is how broken the system is, Mike. I can take a drug like Deuexis, which is $30,000. You can buy the active ingredients over the counter for about $9 a month.
Yeah.
Okay. Which is about $100 a year, let's call it. So $30,000 versus $9 for the exact same active ingredients. So what I can do is I can tell the manufacturer, look, here's the discount I need through my mail order pharmacy. I need a deep discount on it. So therefore, give me a new NDC number, create a new AWP that's 10% higher, because I've got to go back to my client, my broker, who's spreadsheeting me, and my discount needs to be better than the other discount. So inflate the AWP so I can give 5 more points off of AWP discount to the client. So I tell the client, look, I'm going to give you 23% off instead of 21%. And then I'll also increase your rebates by $12 a claim.
You've made a different NDC and you've jacked the price up.
You just added $30,000 of net cost to the client. You give them back $1,000. So they net out $29,000. They're telling the broker, you're the best broker ever because look at all these rebates. And then the broker says, well, look, had you not used us, you would have paid 21% off instead of 25% off. Well, then that's where we come in and say, no, because we wouldn't have used that same drug to begin with. Why would you want 25% off of a drug that's 10,000% higher when we could have used the generic ingredients and netted you out at $9 off the start?
All right. So remember, though, Nathan, you are gone. So now this evil person comes in and does this, and he does it for 10 years and it's done. What's stopping him?
Nothing. Nothing's stopping them. The industry is not prepared. There's not enough people with the right skill sets to catch it. Regardless if you're Milliman, Siegel, Treveris, whichever consulting company you want to come in and do some data analytics, this stuff is almost impossible to catch. Now, you can, because you're talking about 4,000 drugs and you're sliding one or two in, and some of these drugs, it may be a $400 drug versus a $350 drug where it's not even noticeable. So, but you can do it on volume of claims when you adjudicate 1 and 2 billion claims. How many millions of claims can you slip through?
Exactly.
So it doesn't take much. So basically, the bad guy, and the data figures don't lie, but liars figure. So in this particular industry, the data is so easy to manipulate because it defies the laws of mathematics. And again, everyone's drank the Kool-Aid. It's about 4 things. This says it's all about your discounts. It's all about your dispensing fees, the admin fees that you're paying your vendors, and your rebates. Okay, those are the 4 buckets you need to look at. So you want rebates high. You want dispensing fees low, admin fees low, and discounts high. Right? And you'll win every RFP out there. Well, it's a broken system because there's this inherent belief, Mike, that every PBM is going to adjudicate the same drug. So AWP is the exact same. So just apply the best mathematical formula on top of that, and then you will net out a lower cost. And that's where we're different. And there's many companies like ours out there that are transparent, that are good, that had disclosed all of their revenue to the client. There's a few others higher than us now, but there for a long time, I always told our clients, we are the highest disclosed admin fee PBM in the country because everyone else has done it for free.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Right.
I think, but when you look at their financials, I mean, the financials are readily available. Look at the net revenue, look at the claims, and do the division. And look at what they're generating per claim. And they're doing that by charging you zero. So our point to our clients is, do you want the manufacturers to pay me or do you want to pay me? And with us, you don't get a choice. But clearly, the hand that feeds you is who you serve.
All right, so back to this guy. There's no way to stop your evil twin.
I don't think so.
Can the government help?
You know, in my opinion, and again, I was, and I'm not throwing all these titles around to impress anybody, but I was president of the Indiana Association of County Commissioners, the first one in the history of Daviess County. And so I've got to work with, and the county commissioners are basically like the mayors of the county, if you will. We're the executive and the legislative branch. So we're the president and Congress of the county. The county commissioner, you set all the local ordinances. Yeah, the buck stops at the county commissioner level. My point in all that is, you know, I'm from the government and I'm here to help. Are eight fairly frightening words, depending on the situation, because the government's just not equipped for this. And so what happens is the government can set some policy that, you know, they can only set one policy, right? But they have literally 100,000 different clients and maybe 1,000 different situations. And now you have one policy and you try to just average it all out and say, okay, here's the one policy. It actually makes some situations worse and other situations better, and it nets out net positive. But at the end of the day, I think, you know, pharma now has 14 lobbyists for every one legislator in D.C. There is so much money. PBMs, when they do their job effectively, they can and they do bring tremendous value to the healthcare system, but they can also do a lot of damage.
So the stuff going in front of SCOTUS, you know, the different states, I guess one way to look at that is saying, hey, it's pretty good. The other way to say it is like, there's 1,000 ways that PBMs can cheat you, and you might have taken away two of them, but now there's 998. Is that a fair statement?
100%. And the creative mind is very creative. I mean, the capitalistic free market world we have. And again, I mean, think this thing through. If all the traditional PBMs plummeted, everyone's going to be impacted because they're typically in most of the mutual funds, most of our IR 401ks. So therefore, we're like, well, we don't want our stock to go down. We just want them to make less money.
You can't have both.
You can't have both. So it all goes back to how are you generating your money? What value are you delivering to your client? And are you being honest?
The government can't do anything about it.
Let me peel back one more layer. So one thing that we did in Indiana, and again, we were not necessarily proponents of it, and I'll tell you why, but on Senate Bill 241, I was a campaign manager for a state Senate candidate 6 years ago. We went against an incumbent, which apparently you're not supposed to do in the United States, and we defeated a 20-year incumbent. And we're just two bumpkins from Washington, Indiana. I've always been involved legislatively. So I helped get the PBM audit bill passed a number of years ago, 2012, to protect the pharmacies. And so there was another PBM transparency bill that was being introduced in the State House, and the bill was terrible. And so what was happening is the traditional PBMs all have their lobbyists who know all these legislators. The independent pharmacies, God love them. I mean, that's who I am on the inside. They had one little lobbyist who had no stature in the State House, and they were trying to file this bill. Well, they got the bill actually in, and they got it authored, and they got it heard. Well, the bill was terrible. And what all the bill was going to do is make it look like PBMs were regulated. Meanwhile, it did nothing. So we got involved, again, begrudgingly, and we spent hundreds of hours on this bill, and we rewrote about 85% of this bill, and all of our edits stayed in the final bill. It passed, and basically it's a licensing bill, so we at least know who the PBMs are. And there's some transparency in pieces in there, meaning that if you receive rebates or any sort of manufacturer compensation, you have to disclose that to the Department of Insurance. And here goes to some of the problem with why government is so inefficient. Nothing against the state administrations. There's a lot of dedicated government employees that we have, 100%. There's also some who can't find jobs in the private sector, and that's why they take 80%, you know, of the pay and work for the government, just for full disclosure. So now we got this director of insurance who knows nothing, doesn't even know what PBM stands for. And now he or she's going to be the one governing this and creating the rules process to create rules to administer this. Guess who they're going to write the rules? The PBMs. So therefore, the PBMs are writing their own rules. Meanwhile, what's happening is the traditional PBMs are creating their own group purchasing organizations, the GPOs, to spin off the whole rebates stuff. To spin that off the PBM, put that with the sister company, and they say, okay, the GPO is the one that actually manages all the rebates. we're the PBM, we're regulated under Senate Bill 241, and we receive no revenue from the manufacturers.
But they've just made their sister company like an offshore account kind of thing.
They just spun it off. So at the end of the day, employers have to get sick and tired of being sick and tired. And once they start saying enough's enough, and if you keep doing the same thing over and over again and you expect different results, you're insane.
God bless the government, but they can only do so much. Employers have to get sick and tired of it. We know that you need to get your word out. How does that flip then? I mean, like, I'm sick and tired of paying a high cable bill, but I don't know enough to go out and find some independent this or do this. And I'm sick and tired of a lot of stuff. I don't know what to do though. So where does this go? How does this turn the course?
So what I think happens is similar to what happens with us, and we have no growth strategies. With our current trajectory, we'll probably be over $1 billion in about 4 or 5 years, but I could not care less. So what happens is there's going to be enough insurance brokers out there who say, look, there's a real opportunity here. We can go in, expose this flaw in the system. We can go in, and if we get this set of data, and we can get it analyzed in this way, and we can show them in a very simple manner what's happening under their current broker's guidance, we're going to really grow our business. And that's what's happening. There's a lot of these regional brokers now that are going in and taking on these billion-dollar consulting companies, and they're going directly to the employer to say, look, you've been had. Your discounts continue to go up and up and up. Your rebates go up and up and up, and your PEPM goes up and up and up, and here's why.
These big consulting companies, they're the ones that are supposed to say, well, this has to happen. This is a natural course of action, that kind of stuff.
The big guys are basically just taking the message from the PBM partners they partner with. And so the big guys, I'm sure, are going back to their PBMs and saying, hey, what the heck's going on? My PEPM continues to go up for my clients. And then the PBMs have these billions of dollars of payroll and these silver-tongued foxes who say, well, yes, but according to our analytics, if you would have used a non-consortium model, your cost would have been here versus here. So you need to take that back to your client and show them where they would have been. And the client looks at that spreadsheet and says, well, it would have been worse off, so I guess I better just stay put.
Pretty, and it's shiny, and it's got a nice cover and that kind of stuff.
It's pretty, it's shiny, and 9's less than 10.
The PBMs are saying, if it wasn't for us, your insurance rates would be 30% higher. Now they're only 20% higher.
Well, and in the PBM's defense, we could say, look at the retail price the pharmacy submitted. We got you 45% off of the retail price just right out of the gate.
Yeah.
You eliminate your PBM. Like, I hear some of this going on. You'll get rid of the PBM. Yeah, and have the employer pay the retail price. How much do you think their costs would go up then?
I think a lot of things have been helped by the internet. One of them is maybe some of the corruption. And let's just say in Hollywood, you know, if it wasn't for the internet, these people who have come forward, they wouldn't have had the strength to come forward if they didn't have a ton of people agreeing with them, you know, and having this force of Twitter and all these people. I think this is the best time. If there's a time for a group rising up, it could be everybody exposing the PBMs. Now, I'm not sure if that's going to work, because it might work for like the Me Too movement or different things, but I think it's so hard to understand. I don't know if that can get the traction of just social media bringing this up.
Well, again, I'm a pharmacist. I'm a pharmacist at heart. I'm an independent pharmacist at heart. But the tone and the messaging coming from the pharmacy industry is just more of, you know, in my opinion, hey, they're taking too much money from us, from the pharmacies. And there's nothing from the pharmacy side that says, look, we're trying to look out for the client and the member. Pharmacies are looking out for themselves. And it's to some degree, because they're getting totally abused. So in my opinion, what needs to happen is, instead of saying, you know, PBMs are terrible, PBMs are bad, let's just get rid of all PBMs, and you don't offer a replacement.
Yeah.
Then that's an even worse situation than we're in now. So, but here's what I see happening. I see it in Ohio. I see it in Pennsylvania in particular. And again, we got clients and members in all 50 states, and we're moving more towards the West. But the biggest cluster is on this side of the Mississippi. What I'm seeing is some very, very intelligent pharmacists that are creating consulting companies that now they are aligning with a local regional broker. Mm. So that local regional broker now has this value proposition to employers who says, look, I've got a pharmacist who owns a pharmacy who knows the inside perspective of pharmacy better than anybody. And then that pharmacist is the ones that's vetting out all these RFPs. That pharmacist is the ones that interacting with me where I can say, well, yes, 9 is less than 10, but take this into account and take that into account. And then they can say, oh, okay, well, I can dumb that down where I'm going to, you know, you say this, but here's how I'm going to tell the client. Because when the end user and the creator or interface, sometimes that's just too big of a gap as far as a knowledge gap. So I see that happening more and more. I see pharmacists creating podcasts to try to get the message out. So pharmacists are taking a stand. We're just used to seeing immediate change in front of us, but the change is happening.
Nathan, in that example you gave, would the broker let the client know that they've got this pharmacist?
100%.
They would let them know this. Say, hey, I had a pharmacist explain this to me, but I'm going to give it to you a little bit simpler, but he told me this, and this is what's happening.
It's a huge value proposition, and now it's being adulterated. So even the larger companies now have quote-unquote pharmacists on staff. But the legitimate cases, it's a great value prop. The insurance agent, the consultant, you know, they pat you on the back. They're your gregarious, hey, let's go golf. And they're your relationship guys, right?
Right.
They can't articulate this. So whenever they're able to bring their pharmacist partner to the table and says, okay, look, here's our pharmacist partner. They've looked at your data. And here's what he or she found. And I just want them to explain it to you directly.
They would actually have the pharmacist talk to the client, but through the broker, sort of.
They are part of that broker's team.
Would the client and the pharmacist ever talk face-to-face or not?
100%. All the time.
But always with the broker, they're kind of dumbing it down if needed and so on.
So this pharmacy consultant is basically an employee of this brokerage company on a part-time basis. So they run and operate their pharmacies. And then whenever they have a new prospect, then the broker basically they do the repricing. The pharmacist consultant does all the repricing process. And then they bring them in. And then sometimes they'll connect us if we're like one of the finalists. They'll connect us via Zoom or via Teams, or we'll go there in person and we'll show our value prop. And then the pharmacist consultant that works for this independent broker will then add their commentary. And then it makes this insurance broker who brought these folks to the table that much more valuable because they want to have a good team around them. And then they're able to grow their business. So pharmacists being involved in the prescription insurance world is happening more and more.
Who do you need to make the most business relationships with? Is it brokers?
Yes, brokers, 100%.
You want to get tight with brokers?
In our model, because we have no debt, we have no outside investors, we have no private equity, we have nobody knocking on our door saying you need to make more money. So if we wanted to grow the quickest, you got the clients at the base, you got the brokers, you got the TPAs, and you got the stop loss at the top. So if we want to grow the quickest, we contact the top 20 stop loss carriers and say, look, you know, here's the commission we can pay you per covered member. And also, and here's the value of added programs we can bring to you, which protects the stop loss as well. And they wrap that with amazing care, and we have the best customer service in the PBM industry that you can get. But I tell my team, hey, stay humble, because you're in the PBM industry, you're not saying much.
Right, right.
But the insurance broker is really our sweet spot.
Wait, the TPA, the one that you were just describing, I think I'm following, but would that feel good for you? Would that feel ethical, or is there something not good about that?
So the TPA would feel good, but what's going to happen? Here's what eventually is going to happen. The larger PBMs have to continue to grow.
Yeah.
They grow by creating preferred relationships with TPAs. So in my opinion, they have a spreadsheet of all TPAs, 1 through 10,000, and they're working their way down the list. Eventually, they're going to get to the TPAs we partner with. And they're going to say, hey, look, we can give you $3 per claim. What are you currently getting from TrueScripts? And they're going to say, I don't get anything from TrueScripts. What do you mean? Then the TPA comes to me and says, hey, I've got 100,000 claims for you. I need $3 a claim. And then we're like, well, we can't add that $3 to our existing admin fee to the client.
Right.
And we can't take half of our admin fee and give to you. What are you doing for it? Like, well, this other guy's going to. So it's a pay to play.
So the TPA, we're going to throw that out because eventually you're going to get bid it out or whatever by them. So then the next step down would be the...
The brokers. Yeah, the stop loss is the tip of the pyramid.
The stop loss is the tip. Could you do a similar thing with...
The similar thing's going to happen with the stop loss company eventually.
You're going to get some shenanigans with the bigger PBMs.
Exactly. So the brokers really is where we've had most of our success, Mike, because most of the regional brokers we work with have like a zero commission plan. And if we need to get 50 or 60 cents of our admin fee and they're doing the right things for the client and I want to invest and I charge the exact same no matter what. So once I earn the money, I can do anything with it that I want to. And if I want to give 10% to a broker who shares our values and is bringing business to us and we're all protecting the client and the member, then that's my prerogative. Yeah, and we do that in a handful of cases, but it's not a standard.
What's your best way then to build those relationships with the brokers?
I get face to face. When we can get face to face and we can say, look, send us a claims file. These are incurred claims. The client's already paid these claims. You can't change incurred claims, incurred expenses. So there's no manipulation of the data because the data has already been incurred. So send us the data file. Let me run it through our analytics. Let my team look at it. We'll run that through our programs, our proprietary programs that we have in-house, for specialty and for formulary guard. And then let us show you what the costs would have been had we been your PBM. We'll show you our admin fees, our rebates, and we'll also show you some of the drugs that our formulary guard program caught and explain to you what some of the alternatives could have been. So once we talk through that message and we're able to get face-to-face, we're not hiding anything. So we can peel the numbers back as much detail as they need.
That's your sales team?
Well, and we just added a sales team really in January. I've never had a sales team. We've grown from word of mouth.
Really?
Word of mouth.
Broker to broker?
Broker to broker, client to client. And if someone hears about us, our client retention rate's about 95% from the very beginning. We rarely lose a client.
What is your sales team going to do? Are they going to cold call these people or what?
Good question. If they're listening, that's a good question. We got three sales guys, one in Ohio, Atlanta, and Indianapolis. So they're getting some traction. So basically what they do is they try to identify the local regional brokers. They open the door and they say, look, can we connect you? Can we get you on the phone with Nathan or Chastity or Dean? We got a team of professionals. And you know, it's an interesting story. And usually with me, we either really, really connect or we don't. And life is so short. I'm like, look, if we don't connect, I don't need the money. Yeah, we don't need to be looking over each other's shoulders. We'll just move separate ways. But typically, we connect fairly well.
Knowing that the government may not be the answer, knowing that pharmacists ourselves may not be the answer, because people are listening to our complaining and they say, well, yeah, well, of course you'd complain. You know, everybody wants to make more money. For the sake of argument, you going to brokers is going to be the answer. Can pharmacists help you out in any way?
100%. Pharmacists can help out everybody by trying to educate the HR manager or the president or the CFO. It's got to be some sort of decision maker at these. And a self-insured client's typically anyone with 50 employees or above. If I owned a pharmacy today, start high level. Is your prescription drugs increasing or decreasing? And they're going to say, well, they're continuing to go up. And say, you know what? These PBMs are making hundreds of billions of dollars. If you Google PBM lawsuits, you're going to get about 68,000 hits. So, but basically, there are some good guys out there. Now, you have a broker, you have an advisor of some sort. If you're interested, have that advisor, that broker call me. I call them brokers. Have the broker call me, Mr. Pharmacy Owner, or give me their name, and I'll forward that name over to some PBMs I know, and I'll have them reach out and have them kick the tires. No cost, no obligation. Tell them to get lost if you don't like what they say. People want to work with folks that they know, like, and trust. And it's so true. So
no wonder why I'm having such a hard time at the store.
Yeah, you got to shape up a little bit, Mike. There's only so much we can do here. Yeah. You blame the PBM all you want, but yeah. I don't know, but it's a very soft sales strategy. So then what happens is that broker then says, okay, well, shoot, this client now, because here's what the broker doesn't want to happen. The broker loses their job very, very easily because they get fired all the time because the new broker comes in and says, hey, I've got a shiny new tool. And then the client looks at the existing broker saying, why didn't you tell me about this shiny new tool? So they always feel a little threatened at the very beginning. So then, but if it's a regional broker, then once we reach out, we usually say, hey, look, here's four other clients we have in your geographical area. And then that usually sets them at ease because no one wants to be the first.
Yeah.
And then we just start telling them our value prop and say, look, here's our story. And just like we had the conversation we've had tonight, you know, we usually tell them the messaging, here's the data we need, no cost, no obligation. And then here's how the process works. And then usually that broker then says, huh, this is pretty interesting. Maybe it does work for this client. And then what we do, and let's say it was your best friend. And I'll give you, for instance, and we've done this several times. We tell the client, we don't care where the drugs are filled at. Here's your cost. Here's our contracted rates for all the pharmacies. So we'll create different networks in place. So if it's a municipality, we'll have a shop local where I call it CVSing CVS. Where what means is if you use a local independent pharmacy, you pay a lower copay. If you use a chain, you pay a higher copay because we want all that business to go to the locals. All the 90-day supplies can be restricted to one pharmacy. Yeah. So we can carve out this network that says, look, if you're within this zip code, here's your 90-day pharmacy. Mm. If you're outside the zip code, you can use anybody. So the fact of the matter is that we can customize that network to drive the business locally because every dollar that's spent local like circulates seven times versus, you know what I'm getting. And we're like, as long as we can show you the net cost is better. And we know how much pharmacies get paid. And I know all the tricks on the pharmacy ownership. I know the discounts and the rebates. And we want pharmacists to make a fair wage. And, you know, if they're making 16 to 18, 19% gross margin and they have volumes of 7, 8,000 claims, they're going to do fine. Right. But it was when they're making 7 or 8%. But then the client's not paying that because of the spread pricing. So anyway, you guys have a tremendous amount of power. And it's just, but you got to start high level. You got to idiot proof it and say, look, guys, this is easy. Just all you got to do is have your broker call Nathan. Here's a cell phone. And, you know, what's your broker get paid for? And if your broker says, hey, Nathan's a clown, well, just explain why Nathan's a clown and then move on. And then if your client says, well, he doesn't sound like a clown, and Mike went and referred me to a clown, so maybe my broker's a clown. So.
Yeah. Pleasure meeting you, Nathan.
Oh, Mike, my pleasure at all. I could talk all night about this stuff.
We could go all night on this stuff. So that was great. That was really interesting. I think I might have learned some tonight.
It's always great talking to another pharmacist and talking to another boiler.
I'm pretty sure the football team's going to go undefeated this season.
You know, it's the first year that I can ever remember that we're not going to have a loss. It's going to be great.
All right, Nathan, we'll talk again. Take care.
All right, Mike. Take care, buddy.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. You've been listening to the Business of Pharmacy podcast with me, your host, Mike Kelzer. Please subscribe for all future episodes.